Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Chicago, Friday, August 5. Hello again, Orion Samuelson, along with Max Armstrong. Several other guests will be joining us, too, during this week's program as we take a look at another record day on Wall Street. Stocks notched their best day in a month today, with the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ closing at record highs after a second straight month of very strong labor market data. That boosted optimism that economic growth is accelerating, and one analyst said, "This is a flat-out strong report. There don't appear to be any holes whatsoever." He was talking about the employment numbers that were weak in April and May, and then a surprisingly strong reading in June that left investors a little bit unsure of the state of the economy. The June employment number was revised today to 292,000, up from 287,000. But the Labor Department report this morning showed non-farm payrolls rose by 255,000 in July, well ahead of expectations for a gain of 180,000. And while the unemployment rate remained unchanged at 4.9%, it did hold below the 5% mark associated with full employment. So the S&P 500 ended at 2182, its eighth closing high of the year, thanks to a nearly 2% gain in financials. J.P. Morgan Chase, for example, shares up 2.7%, and the financial index on the S&P closed at its highest level of the year. And some of the categories of increased employment were a little bit surprising as well. The hotel, leisure segment, for example, and retailing showing a pretty good increase as well. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 191 points, ending the week at 18,543. The NASDAQ Composite added 54 points for the day, and it ended at 52.21. The NASDAQ, incidentally, surpassed a record that was set in July a year ago. And for the week, the Dow gained 0.6%, the S&P 500 gained 0.4%, and the NASDAQ advanced 1.1%. However, one of the stocks that took a major hit today, Bristol-Myers, it dropped 16%. After its lung cancer drug failed in a late-stage study, while Merck, which makes a rival drug, saw its shares go up 10.4%. Bristol-Myers was the biggest drag on the S&P 500, while Merck gave the benchmark index its biggest boost. And about 6,770 million shares changed hands today in U.S. exchanges. So what do we owe? There's one thing I wanted to mention. I'm wondering what the anti-GMO people are going to do with this story, a story that came out late this afternoon, and here it is. The United States has taken another step toward clearing the way for a trial of genetically modified mosquitoes in Florida as a way of reducing populations of mosquitoes that carry the Zika virus. The Food and Drug Administration said today that a field trial testing Intrexon Corporation's genetically engineered mosquitoes would not have a significant impact on the environment. And the announcement came as Florida officials ramp up aerial pesticide spraying of a neighborhood in Miami. Florida, the first state to report local transmission of the virus. But it'll be interesting to see if anti-GMO people are going to react to this attempt to curb a disease that is very serious. So what do we take a look at on Wall Street as we look ahead? The earnings report season is still going, but we've now heard from more than half of them. But this week coming up, Quarterly earnings reports from department store operators, including Macy's, luxury goods companies such as Michael Kors, and entertainment company Disney will set the tone for Wall Street. And data due on Friday will be watched because it will be the retail sales report, providing a further sense of the economy's health, but it also could give the Federal Reserve more ammunition to raise interest rates later in the year. And, of course, today's employment data did just that, a higher percentage now of traders and analysts expecting an interest rate increase in December. Data next week likely will show some weak productivity, tame inflation, strong retail sales. The Labor Department expected to report on Tuesday that non-farm productivity increased at 0.5% annual rate in the second quarter. Labor Department data on Thursday will likely show import inflation pressures subdued in July. And then on Friday, the Labor Department expected to report that its producer price index for final demand edged up 0.1% in July after advancing 0.5% in June. And also Friday, the Commerce Department likely to report that solid demand for automobiles helped support retail sales in July. Retail sales expected to have risen 0.4%. Now, the earnings report. Well, media company and theme park operator Walt Disney expected to report an increase in quarterly revenue and profit on Tuesday. Macy's, the biggest U.S. department store operator, expected to report a second quarter profit on Thursday. Chipmaker NVIDIA Corporation expected to report an increase in profit when it reports second quarter results on Thursday. On Tuesday, handbag maker Coach expected to report an increase in fourth quarter comparable store sales. And then burger chain operator Wendy's will be reporting on Wednesday, and on Friday, JCPenney will report second quarter results. So it'll be another busy week of watching earnings reports from some major companies across the U.S. Max Armstrong sits down with Greg Groh of Archer Financial Services to talk about markets when we continue On the Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need, today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Each weekend, it's a pleasure to have at the microphone with us respected market analysts, advisors, brokers, counselors. Greg Groh from Archer Financial Services is in the studio with us this weekend. You and your colleagues, of course, have watched this crop, these corn and soybean crops grow and grow and grow, and they look so good now. I know there are those pockets of exceptions. There's Ohio. There is a big chunk of Michigan. Then you've got South Dakota, a little bit of Iowa, a little bit of Missouri. Those are fairly small spots on the drought monitor map, but in between those areas, it looks mighty fine.
Well, crops look very strong, and you know, we've had a warm July compared to last year and a warm July compared to history, but the rains came very timely for most people. You mentioned those areas that are in a tight spot right now, and yields are not going to be as good as they could be in those areas, but generally the crop is in very favorable condition. And when you see crop condition ratings as high as they've been here through late July, historically that tells us we have a strong propensity for above trend line yields.
Has there been enough bearishness put into this market, priced into the market ahead of the crop report that's coming up, that report may not have much negative effect on prices?
Well, that's the interesting question. Most think that, you know, the data and so forth suggest the USDA probably doesn't change much in the August estimates as far as its yield estimate. The possibility is there we could see an increase just due to these crop conditions. Private estimates, though, are higher, and we've seen a lot of talk of 170-plus national corn yield starting to creep into the marketplace.
And even talk of a total corn crop size of 15 billion bushels. That's a staggering number for those of us who remember 12 not long ago.
Well, remember the acreage was up in the June report over to March intentions, which was a little bit of a surprise, and a lot of folks didn't feel we could carry above trend line yields this year, given history that after 2 or 3 years of that, normally we don't see it going into the third and fourth years. But it's there. The weather has been generally very favorable to help this crop along very well.
Soybeans, too, look very good at this point of the game. In fact, USDA in the weekly crop analysis last week actually showed an improved rating of the beans. They're getting better.
Well, that's right. And you've had, you know, some areas got some very good rains just at the end of July here. And we've got more general moisture in the forecast, at least normal type moisture for the month of August. Unlike corn, crop ratings at the end of July don't always give us a true read on our final yields for soybeans, but it does look like with the forecast we have for August, we should be able to maintain strong yield potential, and there's a lot of talk of 48 to 49 bushel national yield in the market right now.
Other than double-cropped soybeans after soft red winter wheat, the crop is pretty well made, isn't it?
Certainly is. You know, there's a lot of feeling right now that it's going to, with the forecast we have, that it's going to be very hard to make a dent in things right now.
Now, when I say that, I'm immediately prompted by a grower who will say, well, no, wait just a minute, pal. It's not in the bin yet. Farmers get more concerned about that than the market does, don't they?
Oh, I think so. And, you know, you always have the possibility of an early end to the growing season or something like that that could come at us that we don't see right now. But we look at some of your longer-term forecast maps, it looks like we're going to maintain this warmer-than-average trend right into the fall. You know, that could mature some of these crops a little earlier than we'd like to see, which might, you know, take the top end off of things. But certainly there's a lack of threat right now, given where we are. And if you compare that to some of the talk back in May and early June when traders were thinking about a dry or a drought type of an August, it certainly hasn't been the case.
I talked to an elevator owner the other day who said, you know, I'd kind of like to see rain delays during harvest. He said that gives us a chance to catch up, and especially when you're staring at a big crop coming in.
Well, that can be the case, and we'd like to see the crops mature normally out there in the field so that we have maximum type yield potential. Whether or not we see kind of logistics issues, there's so much more on-farm storage now than there's ever been, more industrial storage at the end user level. Talking to people in the transportation regions, they feel there's going to be adequate capacity to move the crop around versus, say, where we were 2 or 3 years ago. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a big crop. It probably is, a lot of it's going to all come at once. So
covered hopper cars and barges should generally be where they are needed.
Just visited with some people. I was up in Minnesota last week talking to some people about that, and it generally appears that there's going to be adequate capacity across the regions.
You know, when you talk about storage, many elevators have found it very easy to expand their storage outside. I shouldn't say easy. It's not a cakewalk, but they've learned how to do it years ago in terms of routinely piling it out on the ground and putting some kind of a cover over it in most instances.
I think people have gotten very good at it. There's a lot of new technology in that area, and it seems like it's going to be, it should be a big part of this year's harvest also.
That's the corn. Now, soybeans need to find a home under the roof somewhere.
Mm-hmm. That's definite, but, you know, we have a lot of demand right now. I hear that there's a good lineup starting to build for to take a lot of beans here this fall out of the Gulf, and so it's just going to be getting them down there in a timely fashion, and the export book looks very strong right now.
Are we the only game in town now for many months?
I think so right now, going into the end of the year. Definitely. It looks like a lot of business is focused on us. We saw a decline in the total scope and size of the South American crop right at the end. It's brought new business to us. We factored a lot of that into our balance sheet forecast, but it looks like that business is here. We've seen very strong offtake here just recently.
Obviously, South American farmers will be preparing to respond to plant, and they're looking at the same price signals. They cannot be encouraged by these prices.
No, but you do have places like Argentina, which have changed their tax regime right now, especially as in regard to corn and wheat, and we're already hearing a shift in acreage there away from soy towards especially corn, with a lot of talk in the market that corn acres could expand, say, 25% in Argentina over last year.
25%, that's 25%, a big number.
And they've left their tax on beans, and they've dropped it completely on wheat and corn, and I think that's a financial incentive for growers in that area to expand wheat and corn acreage in the coming year.
You know, while we're talking about South America, I can't help but think of all the attention being given the Olympics and the problems that Rio has. Anyone who ever traveled there had to be shocked a few years ago when it was announced that Rio had beaten out Chicago as a choice for the Olympic Games. The city's been a cesspool for years. No offense to, and I love Brazilian people. I love traveling in rural Brazil. I love getting out into the countryside. But that city has been a mess in more ways than one for decades.
Well, it's a very large city with a lot of growth, a lot of problems. It's interesting, when the Olympics were awarded there, they were right on the top of a massive commodity boom. The economy was seeing some of its best growth in history. Commodity prices, iron ore prices, all the things that Brazil was involved with were very strong, and things looked very, very good for them as they bid for the Olympics. And now here we are a few years later, and things are not so good economically down there and politically, and they've struggled to pull this together. But it'll be interesting to watch. I'm very hopeful we'll watch the American team and see how things go.
Agriculture remains a very important part of their overall economy, does it not?
Very much. It's, commodities in general are a very big part, whether it's on the mining side, the energy side, and, of course, agriculture. I think, it's been a very big part of the economy and will continue to be a massive part of the Brazilian economy.
Mining, let us not forget, that's an industry in trouble, too. Not just in the United States, where coal mines are shutting down left and right as power plants, coal-fired generating power plants, are being shut down by Washington. But this is something you hear, for example, in Australia, where mining is a big industry competing with agriculture.
Well, it's all about the overall boom-bust cycle that we see time and time again across the resources, natural resources, and commodities. And we've been through a big boom cycle, and now we're at the bottom or maybe at the trough of a down cycle. But it's about demand and supply. And when prices are high, we increase supply. When prices are down, supply tends to shrink, and we start the process all over again.
We can't have a discussion without talking about China and in regard to that soybean demand. It's going to stay constant, relatively constant, is it not?
I think so. I think the overall structural reasons for the soybean demand in China remain. There has been talk recently that after 15 years of growth in soy demand, imports from China to the world, to obtain the world supply, maybe that growth is slipping. I know that some private forecasters mentioned a few weeks ago that they believe we might see a down year in the coming year for their imports, but that's yet to be seen. And I think that in general, their appetite for soy will remain very strong.
There is so much political chatter with the presidential campaigns continuing here into the home stretch. We did see a report this week that the Clinton campaign has reached out to some of the California environmental officials, trying to get their grasp on how to change the renewable fuels mandate. Regardless of whether or not, one campaign or another is successful, whoever's in the White House, if they change the renewable fuels mandate, it has significant ramifications for agriculture here in the heartland, doesn't it?
Oh, certainly. Corn is over a third, if not almost 40% of total demand right now on the ethanol side. And so any kind of a changes there structurally that reduce the importance of that industry here would have a dramatic effect given where we stand right now in the farm economy.
Well, we'll continue to watch. Thank you for all of your insight and your visits from time to time. It's always nice to see your smiling face, Mr. Groh.
Well, thank you, Max. It's always a pleasure to be here with you.
Greg Groh with Archer Financial Services.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need. today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
This past week, I took an interesting airplane ride in my Cessna 210 from Chicago up to Redwood Falls, Minnesota. Saw the lushest, greenest landscape I've ever seen. The only areas that weren't green were harvested wheat fields. Crops look great. The event was Farm Fest, the annual farm show at Redwood Falls, Minnesota. Fellow farm broadcaster Lynn Kettleson with the Linder Network is involved deeply with that show. So I sat down with Lynn and we talked about Farm Fest.
You know, Farm Fest is our major outdoor ag show. And we should also, we should name you honorary captain of Farm Fest. They absolutely love you here. And we're hearing that from the crowd out here. And it's just a nice event to come to. People enjoy looking at booths, but they also enjoy coming up and watching people on stage like yourself and other people. It's just a really nice, homey atmosphere.
Taking a look at the weekly crop progress reports, Minnesota continues to be impressive. Talk to me about it.
You know, I've never seen corn so uniform in my life. We have another record coming, and after last year, most experts said, that's not going to happen. You can't have 2 years in a row. We do. We've had a few spots with hail, but overall, it's just an outstanding crop from one end of the state to the other. It's a big one.
Is the price challenge going to hurt farmers in your state?
Well, it always does, but if you get those big yields, it does offset a bit. So that last year, we came out pretty well. We had an opportunity to sell earlier in the year, and I think a lot of farmers took advantage of that. So first thing is get the big crop. Second thing, worry about prices.
What segment of agriculture in Minnesota is being challenged the most right now?
The dairy industry is having its challenges. It has its ups and it has its downs. Pork industry is hanging in there, but prices have been low. Although for the consumer in the grocery store, my gosh, pork is a real, real bargain right now. And crop farmers, they're breaking even or making a little bit of money. Some are losing, but you know, overall, it's not the worst that we've seen in many, many years. We're hanging in there.
And we have watched the Corn Belt and the Soybean Belt move farther north every year, haven't we?
You know, Elwin Taylor of Iowa State says now South Central Minnesota is the center of the Corn Belt. And we're getting 200 bushel corn in northern Minnesota. The fastest growing soybean area is the Fargo-Moorhead area in the country. So it is moving north, but you know, it's still in those Midwest areas in the south, too. It's just getting bigger.
A hot day, but a great day at Farm Fest in Redwood Falls. But now, time to get ready for the rest of the outdoor farm show season. And the next one that we'll be going to, well, Max and I find out in this visit.
We see it every year. The summer just flies by, and before you know it, it's time for the Farm Progress Show. It's back in Iowa this year. With us at the desk is Matt Youngman, National Events Manager for Penton Agriculture. That Farm Progress Show, as it moves back and forth between Illinois and Iowa, continues to draw a very big crowd. What's the secret, Matt?
Well, I would say that it doesn't necessarily have a lot to do with us. It's what the exhibitors do at the show. You know, you look at a company like John Deere, who uses it as a place to do their product unveilings. It's the work that all those companies do to make the show great for the visitors.
They've really stepped up, and the permanent sites enhance that immensely, do they not? I mean, because they know they're going to be there year after year after year at the same location, they can put money into it.
They can put money into it. You know, at the very least, they can put a gravel base down so that they have a nice solid base from which to build their exhibits, all the way to putting up permanent signs, permanent buildings, you know, all permanent infrastructure, three-phase electricity, all the things they need to run the air conditioning so that they can really work that game of one-upping the next exhibitor down the street.
The growth in the number of exhibitors has been interesting to watch. I mean, I expected it to plateau with with, you know, agriculture having a finite number of farmers, but the technology and the number of exhibitors just keeps on climbing.
It keeps going up, and I think that the technology is the reason. You know, there's always that next company that has a drone or has an app or has something that's on a smartphone or something that's on a, you know, that's computer based or digital based, and so there's always a backlog. You know, we're already sold out for this year's Farm Progress Show and Husker Harvest Days, and with a wait list for both events. So it's great to see that demand continues to come from new exhibitors.
Matt, you reminded me earlier that we sat down together for our first interview at Farm Progress 21 years ago. 21 years. The biggest change I've seen is the air-conditioned tent. What's the biggest change you've seen?
That's probably it. You know, I think the two biggest changes that I've seen since we started doing this together has been the move to permanent sites, which you know, has made it a lot easier for the exhibitors to put on a good show, and the date change. Going from being at the end of September to being at the end of August allows growers to come. You know, if back when we were right there on the cusp of harvest or having our event during harvest, it was hard for the farmer to justify coming. Now that we're at the end of August, it gives the, you know, they have a couple weeks, most of them, before they're going to hit the field. I think those have been the two biggest changes I've seen happen.
And it worked well with the exhibitors. They were able to get their crops planted on time and have them ready to at least look it.
Yep, that's right. We plant, you know, we're planting 78-day corn in Boone in order to have field demonstrations, and 99-day corn when we're in Decatur, which is really, really early for that geography. But it gets ready to go, and we're able to put on demonstrations there at the end of August.
And I still hear a lot of talk from farmers about walking behind the combine and seeing what comes out of the other end.
Well, it's a good shopping opportunity for them, you know, and or maybe a good opportunity to brag if you're really partial to one particular color or another, but a nice chance to go out and watch those machines compete side by side.
And a final reminder on the dates of the show soon here?
August 30, 31, and September 1st.
Thank you very much. We'll look forward to seeing you there. Matt Youngman, who is the National Events Director for Penton Agriculture. In the marketplace, it was quite a week for the live cattle contracts at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, up about 1% today, capping their best weekly performance since February. Investors adding to long bets following higher trades in Great Plains cash cattle markets, up $2 from a week ago, and that helped the futures. We saw cash cattle trading at $118 a hundredweight. And so we're going to start the week on Monday with the August live cattle contract at $117.50, up $1.17. October cattle at $115.25, that's up 75 cents for the day. And then in the feeder cattle contracts, with some lower corn prices earlier this week and cheaper feed, we did see feeder cattle move higher, and certainly saw that happen today. August feeder cattle ended at $149.85, and that was a gain of $2.27 a hundredweight. Tougher week for hog producers, however, as we continue to look at plentiful supplies of pork on the market. But on Monday, the August lean hog contract will start the week's trade at $67.82 after gaining just 12 cents today. Turning to the grain market, strength in soybeans that I think caught some people off guard. But the surprising reason, as we heard in the discussion with Greg Groh, is the export business. The Department of Agriculture reported today that exporters made deals to sell 498,000 tons of U.S. soybeans to China for delivery in the new crop marketing year that starts on the 1st of September. Now, the even bigger news was this was the eighth consecutive trading day on which the USDA confirmed a soybean deal with China or with unknown destinations, and very often that turns out to be China. So anyway, over that eight-day period, total sales, 2,800,000 tons of soybeans. And so we're going to start the week on Monday with the nearby August soybean contract at $10.03 a bushel after gaining 13 cents today. And the new crop November beans gained 18¼ cents today, so they'll start trading at 974½ on Monday. September wheat had a pretty good day, too, when you take a look at the oversupply of wheat in the world. So we'll start the week Monday with the September wheat contract at $4.16 after it gained 13¼ cents today. And September corn will start the week at $3.24¼. It gained 3 cents today, while new crop December corn gained 2¼ cents. They'll start Monday at $3.34¼. That's our time. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate your company every week here on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.